Thank you, Ms. Habib Powell. Before introducing our next speaker, some people have asked that I say a few words about the National Council and its vision and mission. Its vision is a firmer foundation between the United States and its Arab friends, allies, strategic and working partners. And its mission is educational. And on the educational front, this is but one piece of it that we pursue year-round to raise the level of awareness of Americans about the position and role of the Arab world in global affairs and in terms of America's national interests, needs, concerns, objectives, and relations. For many who view this from the outside, it is perceived as an uphill struggle, and perhaps in many ways it is in terms of some of the shortcomings delineated in several of the remarks this morning. But it's a cause that's worthy, that has its nobility, it has its timeliness, its relevance, and its ongoing urgency, as is amply underscored, highlighted, capitalized, neonized on a day-to-day basis. When we think in terms of the existing generation of leaders who manage policy or who formulate concepts or who are decision makers or who are policy implementers, we realize that this is a select group in the executive branch and the legislative branch. We have taken 220 members of Congress, their chiefs of staff, their defense and foreign policy advisors, their legislative and communications affairs directors, on familiarization and study visit experiences in more than 12 Arab countries. Most of them, if not all of them, are represented here today by their ambassadors at the head table. In addition, we have taken 125 officers selected by the commander of U.S. Central Command to all six of the GCC countries, in addition to Yemen and to Egypt, because they are quite skilled in terms of imposing their military might on those who might resist their cause. But they have not necessarily been schooled in Arab culture and Islamic institutions and beliefs and practices. And to go beyond the stereotype of many Americans, that Americans are part and parcel of the Judeo-Christian culture. That's true, but only two-thirds true. Everyone in this room is a legatee, a descendant, a beneficiary of the Judeo-Christian Islamic culture. There's a triumvirate here, there's a triad here. And the last one, particularly for Westerners, is the culture and the faith of institutions, beliefs, and practices and values to which Westerners have been exposed more intensively and extensively than probably any American would gather through the public or private school system in terms of curricula, textbooks, and professors. And so we have a program for these select military officers from armed services institutions and the academies. But we also have one for educators in the social sciences, the arts, and the humanities. There are 4,200 universities in America, and we have someone inside of 800 of these universities. A number of them, I believe, are here in this conference, and I would ask if you might just stand, those who have been on these particular programs. Last year we had 20 that stood. There's one that stands, and we know that there are 20 on the registration list, and I've seen them here this morning. Perhaps they're enjoying their dinner. These are not just any academics. Those who do research or are in the basement of the library cranking out the learned tome and perfecting their lesson plans. These are individuals chosen precisely because they're as much off the campus, out of the classroom, away from the textbooks, engaged in the community, the civic, business, and professional affairs associations. We have these 800 alumni of this particular program, and they, on average, reach and teach 300 students a year. And this turns out to be 224,000 young Americans, emerging leaders, taught by just the alumni of this particular program. The program that is the cheapest for us, and yet it is the one that produces the most immediate as well as enduring results, is the Youth Leadership Development Program of the Model Arab League. It's like the United Nations, modeled United Nations, except for 193 countries. It focuses on the 22 members of the League of Arab States. And here, the task from the professors that we've taken to the region is to involve their students in these exercises that take place in 13 cities around the United States between the autumn and the end of April. Each year we put 2,500 students through this. We have 25,500 alumni of it. And you might ask, well, what are you teaching them? How do you develop youth in terms of Arab-U.S. relations? The answer is as follows. We teach those who've never had a chance to debate how to debate in 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, nothing any longer than that, because this is the way it is in public life, in many local and regional and national councils where people are deliberating the issues of public policy. We teach them how to learn parliamentary procedure, which for many is a grown-up, out-of-town language. It's not used in ordinary discourse, but in public affairs, for public policy, it's a must that one be able to be adept in public policy from a parliamentary procedure. We teach the young people to chair meetings, to run meetings, because much of public policy is determined in its core in committee work, and how to organize a committee, how to organize an agenda, and what gets onto that agenda, and how do you prioritize the things that are on the agenda, and how do you run a meeting in such a way as to get through all of the items on an agenda. Very little, if any, of this is taught in a classroom. And they also taught how to build coalitions, because no matter how well they research and learn to debate, they'll get nowhere. They'll lose every time if they don't somehow persuade another 11 delegations to agree with them. And how do they do that in terms of the quid pro quo and the trade-offs? And how do they do it to reflect real-life Arab political dynamics in international relations? And one trains them as well to be able to write fast and to edit fast and to write resolutions and to use the language that's used in resolutions. And at the same time, one trains them to vote and to win with grace and dignity, and lose also with grace and dignity, realizing that they'll have another chance, and if they work harder, their prospects for victory might be greater. And in the shadows at all of these, we have grown-ups like many who are here, who are looking for the best and the brightest, the one who really has done the hard work and has gained the self-confidence and the effectiveness and the competence. From these, 41 this last summer went to study Arabic in Yemen at the Yemen Language College. We have the Yemen ambassador here who's been a major supporter of these kinds of people-to-people exchanges. And we brought another 25 here in a competitive contest to work as interns, to take them away from the campus and the coursework and put them in a real organization, a sister organization. 17 organizations represented here took interns with us, where they work all day long, and in the evenings we introduce them to people like those around this table here, who talk to them about the rewards of being in Arab-U.S. relations, whether it's a doctor or a lawyer or a journalist or a government person or a congressional staff person or a banker or an advocate or a human rights participant. And then they turn it over and are quite candid as to what are the frustrations and why is it that some days people think it's not worth the candle, that one is going backwards more than forwards, that one is banging her or his head against the ceiling or the wall. And then after they are frank with them in that regard, they draw back and say, but if I was your age and I had a chance to do it all over again, here's how I would prepare differently. Here's what I would do differently. And many of the student interns coming here thinking that they wanted to be an engineer or a lawyer, introduced to 40 of these different kinds of career opportunities get nicely confused about midway and become attracted to quite a few of these individuals and want to follow in their footsteps, just as people want to follow in the footsteps of Habib Powell and Sheikh Alumna. And I will turn now to introduce our speaker, because she represents a country that has a form structure of government and a system of governance and a system of political dynamics that most Americans here are descendants of other Americans who tried this form of government twice and failed miserably in terms of the first American Articles of Confederation, and then three quarters of a century later, another 13, but not those same 13 in terms of the 13 southern states that tried to have a confederacy. And now the case, could the Americans who put their shoulders to the wheel make these kinds of forms of governance work? I was privileged to live in Dubai before independence, before the British abrogated their special treaties of defense and foreign relations for 9 East Arabian polities, the area from which Sheikh Alumna comes, and allowed to be present in the last meetings when the United Arab Emirates was established. I was the only American allowed by the British Foreign Office in conjunction with the U.S. Department of State. Now, here's one where the others who were observers and present at the creation thought maybe it might last 6 months, because people were looking through a different set of lens, and the lens of all the previous attempted but failed Arab experiments in confederation or unity. But this one stands out singularly for having been the single longest, most successful experiment in Arab political integration in modern history. And Sheikh Alumna represents it in the following ways. She has shown her mettle and achievements in the realm of computer engineering and science and technology. She's had more than 20 years of excelling in this particular field. She has been a businesswoman who has been the CEO of Tijari, and a firm that specializes in business-to-business market strategies using electronic technology. She was singled out by Mohammed bin Rashid, the ruler of Dubai and the vice president of the United Arab Emirates, to represent Dubai as the member of the Dubai Ports World and Dubai Ports Authority. She led the effort in the United States and elsewhere to have that particular arrangement enter into a joint commercially profitable venture between both sides. She served as the country's Minister of Economy, and she's presently Minister for Foreign Trade. Sheikh Alumna Al-Qasimi.
Your Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, a pleasant afternoon to you all, and before anything else, may I congratulate the National Council on U.S.-Arab relations for 25 years of tirelessly championing mutual understanding, peace, and progress between our regions. As one of the staunchest allies of the United States and the Arab world, and one of the most dynamic countries in our region, the United Arab Emirates shares the Council's vision of promoting a unified U.S.-Arab approach to global harmony and development. I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate this year's organizers and sponsors for again successfully masterminding this vital platform for strengthened U.S.-Arab relations. I'm truly pleased to see such a varied and distinguished gatherings of participants who are committed to further developing the bond between two regions that command significant influences in the international affairs. Ladies and gentlemen, as commercial and economic partners for longstanding, the United Arab Emirates and the United States continue to engage in activities that foster mutual growth and sustained progress. UAE consumers purchased $11.6 billion U.S. dollars worth of U.S. goods in 2007, while UAE exports to the U.S. rose by 38% between 2000 and 2007, from $971 million to $1.3 billion, making us the largest U.S. trade partner in the Middle East. As of July 2008, U.S. exports to the UAE for the year exceeded $8 billion, while import reached around $853.3 million. Investments from my country continue to be reliable and long-term sources of growth for the U.S., providing substantial capital and broadening market access. While the UAE has generated most of its oil revenues from sales to Asia, it has invested most of its profits in the U.S. economy, besides other economies. As one of the most open economies in the world and most vibrant in the Middle East, the UAE continues to be the largest export market for the U.S. and the Arab region. In the global arena, my country was the 21st largest export market for the U.S. in 2007 and was recently ranked as one of the top 30 trading nations by the World Trade Organization. But more than being a dynamic regional and international commercial partner, the UAE offers numerous business-friendly benefits that make it a haven for both developing and established companies and organizations. Foremost among these is the government-backed economic diversification program that strongly supports the optimization of various growth sectors such as tourism, real estate, construction, telecommunications, and aluminium production. These sectors contributed $127.3 billion US to our economy in 2007, representing 64.1% of our total GDP. The share is expected to easily exceed 70% in the next 2 years. We have free trade zones that offer state-of-the-art facilities, tax-free operations, and favorable commercial and industrial policies, all critical elements for non-oil sectors. We're also strategically positioned adjacent to the Strait of Hormuz, the maritime corridor through which 20 to 25% of the world's internationally traded oil and gas resources are transported daily. The Emirates are only 7 hours away from Central Asia, Europe, South Asia, Western Asia, India, China, and Africa. We're thus close to half of the global population and most of its emerging markets. This location offers the U.S. and our other valued international partners access to a consumer network of around 2 billion people. Ladies and gentlemen, while all of us gathered here today have affirmed our agreement on numerous positive economic, political, and social advantages of sustained U.S.-Arab cooperation, we in the Arab world in general, and the UAE in particular, believe that much still needs to be done to reach out to the American people to explain who we are and what we offer that has the potential to bring increased benefits to both our peoples. US-UAE Business Council we have established within the US Chamber of Commerce helps us greatly in this end. We also rely on the goodwill fostered by key officials such as our ambassador, His Excellency Youssef Al-Outaiba, who is well-versed in the strategic and related dynamics of the U.S.-UAE relationships. The UAE Ministry of Foreign Trade, which I head, in addition to local UAE chambers of commerce and organizations such as the American Abu Dhabi Business Council, American Business Council of Dubai, the Business Council for International Understanding, and the Council of U.S. Business Association of the Gulf Cooperation Council, continue to explore mechanisms to enhance the dissemination of information to our U.S. counterparts. We specifically aim to provide American Chambers of Commerce, professional trade associations, the business section of American media, and the relevant committees and personnel of the U.S. Congress, the Departments of Commerce, States and Treasury, the Office of the Special Trade Representative, and the Overseas Private Investment Corporation with up-to-date and relevant economic, commercial, and related data that we produce. Distinguished guests, the United Arab Emirates will continue to pursue strategies that will ensure the longevity and productivity of our alliance with the United States. We will, for one, maintain the pegging of our dirham to the U.S. dollar because we believe that the U.S. remains a strong partner for economic growth. and that its renowned resilience will help it overcome the current economic challenges it faces. We are also planning the introduction of more regulatory reforms and policies that will guarantee added success to the more than 750 American firms that we have chosen to set up business on our shores. As a nation, we have become famous for creating magnificent structures that defy the impossible. We would like to translate this reputation to our relations with the U.S. and show the American people how we can significantly contribute to a greater mutual stability, security, and prosperity, regardless of the challenges and the odds. On a different note, and before I conclude, I am sure that you are wondering how we are coping with the global financial crisis. Let me brief you with some notes. Arab and Gulf banks are expected to be safe from the global financial crises, as reflected in the record increase in cumulative budgets, which is expected to reach an impressive $2 trillion U.S. by the end of 2008 and represent a 20% increase. UAE federal government announced its 2007 budget last week with an increase of 21%, focusing on education and health. Arab banks in general do not face a problem on the surplus in foreign currencies, which is the base of the crisis in the West. Several Gulf central banks are ready to pump money into the markets if needed. As part of the economic measures taken by the UAE to support domestic banks to cushion the impact of the current global financial crises, the government allocated $32.7 billion to secure liquidity in the national banking sector and thus protecting the consumers as well, or the people. With the whole of the Middle East in total having less exposure to the U.S. $200 billion of subprime write-off so far than the average U.S. bank, the region has escaped the direct impact of the financial crisis. Indeed, some of the subsequent investments in the U.S. banks by local sovereign wealth fund may mean that the Middle East is a net beneficiary in the long term. In conclusion, I would like to thank the Council and this event sponsors for inviting me to speak on the possibilities continuously unraveled by our robust partnership with the United States. I would also like to extend my appreciation to the American organizations in the United Arab Emirates who closely collaborate with us and give us a voice on Capitol Hill. Lastly, I would like to commend all of you gathered here today for supporting our vision of a unified U.S. Arab community and wish you all the success in your present and future endeavors as well. Please enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you very much and a good day.